Hand off to Williams, trying the right side end run. He cuts up at the 20, 25, right side line, 30, 35, 40. He's in the middle field, 45, 40, 35, 30, 30, 20, 15, 10. He's hit at the 5, dragged down at the 3-yard line. An electrifying run by Charles Williams of 77 yards, first and goal Rebel.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
Monster season so far for Charles Williams. Time to check in on a little UNLV football. JVT, Cofield, Caleb Herring, former Rebel quarterback, is in with us. Of course, he is the analyst on the call on Rebel Radio. Caleb, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Like many Rebel onlookers, I had mixed feelings coming out of this game over the weekend against Northwestern. They lose 30-14. You tell me, physically, did they compete in that game, or were they still a little bit short from the physical standpoint?
I think physically they definitely competed. I mean, that was maybe the one aspect where I was most encouraged about, where they were on a Big Ten stage against Northwestern, who, you know, is not the powerhouse that, you know, Michigan, Ohio State is, but they're still a Big Ten team. I think physically the physicality of the game was pretty even for most of it. I think the problem that, I guess, kind of overwhelmed the Rebels defensively, at least from that standpoint, was kind of gap discipline on some of those run plays where they're getting gashed a little bit in the second half by Anderson, who was just kind of picking them apart on those outside zone reads and cutting it back up hard on the inside. So gap discipline was more of the issue, I think, but the physicality of the game, I think the Rebels were ready for, and on both sides of the ball in the first half, at least. And that was actually a pleasant surprise. It was a good feeling to see the offensive line and defensive line kind of handle themselves in the trenches for most of the game.
Build on that gap discipline, because you're right. You know, it's funny, after the game I was like, well, I thought they did a pretty good job defensively, and then I looked at the numbers, I was like, whoa, okay, well, there was over 260 yards rushing on the Northwestern side. That ain't good. But when you talk gap discipline, what positions are we talking about? What level of the defense?
Well, usually you're talking about the second level, especially when you're dealing with those outside zone stretch plays, where the idea offensively is to get the offense flowing one way and get them pursuing one way. And in a lot of ways it was Northwestern taking advantage of the speed at linebacker and the aggressiveness at linebacker from Javon White and Rashad Jackson, who are good at getting to the ball. But on those stretch plays, it's important to stay inside out. And I think that's what the linebackers for UNLV, at least, were doing a lot of the time. You get penetration from the defensive line and you get guys in the backfield on that stretch play. But a good running back is going to stretch that play out and put his foot in the ground and cut it right back up the middle. And if the linebackers aren't in the gap that they're supposed to be in to meet the running back in the hole, then you see a lot of those gaping runs where you're like, well, how did that get so far? We thought we had him in the backfield. The defensive line did their job occupying blocks, but sometimes the linebacker get out of position over pursuing those stretch plays side to side, and that opens up cutback lanes. And that's what Anderson was doing for much of those big chunk yards that he was pulling off, especially in the second half. Those cutback lanes were wide open for him.
Caleb, I feel like this is kind of a case of deja vu, because we can go back to last year. We're in the fourth quarter against USC. They're down 19-14 with a fighting chance. They end up losing that game. They had games against UCLA, Michigan going back a few years that they hung in, played really well, especially on the road, and yet the second half seemed to, or the fourth quarter, kind of fall back. What is it about this team that they can fight really hard for about 2-3 quarters, it seems, but then end up losing out to some of these Power 5 schools? Like, is that game planning? Is that just the lack of talent? What is it, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it's not game planning. It's not like a talent. I think UNLV, to play three quarters with these teams, you have to have some level of talent. You have to have some sort of game plan that's working, because you're in the game for three quarters, or in some cases deep into the fourth quarter before things start to get away from you. But in my opinion, it might be just a mental fatigue. Like, not necessarily just, I mean, there's obviously the physical fatigue of not having the depth of these type of teams, the Michigans, the Northwesterns. They're going too deep the whole game. And, maybe the depth for UNLV is still not where it needs to be to compete on this stage against that kind of competition. But I think it's more of a mental fatigue that kind of sets in, where sometimes when things aren't going right, if you haven't been there before, if you're not completely sure of yourself as a team and your identity, and if you can win a game because you haven't done it before in this situation, it wears on you going 3 and out, or not scoring points every time, or a missed field goal late, or giving up a third down, third and 12 situation, and you give it up on defense, or getting beaten coverage. And sometimes it takes overcoming those things mentally to stay in the game and stay engaged. And then there's also the element of getting late in the game. You start to press. Like, you start to feel the pressure of the fourth quarter is weighing heavy on you. And it, coaches are guilty of it too, and just as much as players are. You start to press and try to push the issue because you start to realize time's of the essence, and the urgency starts to overwhelm you mentally, and you start to make some mistakes that maybe are uncharacteristic, miss tackles here or there, get out of assignment, out of place, and things like that start to happen late in the fourth quarter if you're feeling the nerves and the pressure of that moment. I think the bigger schools that you mentioned, like the Michigans, Northwestern here, USC, they have people that have been on that stage and competing in games like that a little bit more often in their collegiate career. And I don't think UNLV is there yet to where they have that complete culture shift to where in late in games like that, they're comfortable with the game being close or even from coming back from behind in those situations.
Caleb Herring up on Cofield and Company. You can hear him again tomorrow. Coach's show, Tony Sanchez radio show, The District, Parkway Tavern, 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock. Looking forward to it. I think a couple of players are coming over as well. Some of the captains are slated to be on the show at Parkway Tavern in the district. Halftime adjustments. Do you think that was a problem, especially offensively, because the Rebels rolled up over 220 yards offense in the first half, 102 in the second?
Yeah, definitely it was a problem. I think, and not in the sense that a lot of people may have thought, I think they over-adjusted at halftime. I think the game plan, at least offensively, was working. I mean, Charles Williams is up over 100 yards and a half. The offense was not in any third and long situations. You were every third down that they had five third downs, I believe, in the early in that game, and they were 3 of 5 at one point on third down conversions. And it was like you were in those third and manageables, those third and twos. Armani Rogers only had 9 pass attempts at halftime. It was 7 for 9. He was efficient, not gaudy numbers as far as yards, or didn't have a touchdown yet, but the offense was moving the ball productively. And I think Charles Williams had 12 rush attempts at halftime. The over-adjustment, I think, was anticipating maybe that Charles would be keyed on more. And I think he only touched the ball 4 times. And granted, there was an injury. He left the field for a series, I believe, and came back out. But he only had 4 touches in the second half. And, he's the workhorse. He is the guy at running back. He's one of the leading rushers in the nation right now. The game plan should be to feed him as much as possible. He broke off one of the 4 runs in the second half, was an 11-yard gain. And then after that, it was you didn't see much of him in the second half. Armani's pass attempts also went up. And I understand he's trying to become a better passer. The team will need him in spots to have to complete passes. But I don't think that point ever came where the run was completely shut down. That first drive of the second half, they marched the ball down pretty effectively using the ground game. And then, a couple passes in a row were complete and started feeling good about the passing game. And then the interception kind of squandered that opportunity. But the second half, I think, was an over-adjustment thing. I think outthought themselves and out game planned, I guess, in halftime, thinking what Northwestern would do to come out. And instead of sticking to your guns, I think, at halftime. Defensively, though, I think the halftime adjustments, whatever they were, for the most part worked. They had a great half outside of a couple of plays, a couple of big key situations, but defensively they did a great job in the second half of being ready for what Northwestern came out with, making a couple of big stops, giving up some yards, granted, but made a couple of key stops on third down when it mattered, and fourth down. Javon White made a couple of big stops that really meant a lot down the stretch. But I think over-adjusting offensively at halftime was what I saw. It was anticipating an adjustment that never really happened and kind of bailing out on your number one option a little bit too quick in that game is what I think happened in the second half there.
Two parts. Reaction to Drew Tekman, the safety, the targeting call, and the subsequent ejection, and did that really have an effect in the second half, especially on the 50-yard touchdown pass that Miles Plummer got beat on?
Well, first on that call, I absolutely disagreed with the call. I understand the officials have a tough job, and bang, bang, on the field, it's tough to decide a player's intentions. And I think on the field, you want to err on the side of caution. I understand that completely. I think the booth review being initiated, however, is a whole different ballgame, because there, I understand the spirit of the rule. Helmet-to-helmet contact, it looks forcible because the player's falling down, and he's, in essence, defenseless there. But I think at some point the rule has to be either amended or just viewed differently, because the defensive player's intentions have to be considered, I think, a little bit more. And I, looking at the replay in-house and yes, there's helmet-to-helmet contact. There's no doubt about it. But Drew Tecumseh's intentions were not to deliver a head-to-head blow, target, and intentionally lay somebody out or anything like that. He actually was trying to catch. He had his arms out, outstretched almost, and like trying to catch the receiver. So it's a tough ejection, and I think Coach Sanchez was upset. Drew handled it like a true sport, didn't make a scene leaving the field. Play went on. But to answer your question about the second part, Miles Plummer getting beat on that double move, was one-on-one coverage. And, you know, the safety over the top, if it was Drew Tecumseh or anybody else, he didn't have any help on that play anyway. So I don't think Drew's going to affect that play. That was just an individual mistake by Miles on that double move, getting caught with his eyes in the backfield there, and the route ran right past him for the biggest pass play of the game. But all in all, the defense still played fairly well, and that was actually impressive the way they responded after a major ejection of one of their key guys on defense. They responded well, and there wasn't too many errors in the secondary outside of that. And I mean, they didn't do terribly against the pass last week. It was actually a pretty good showing defensively in the secondary outside of that big play. They may have held them, I think, just over 100 yards if you subtract that big error by Miles Plummer, but just over 100 yards passing for the game for Northwestern if you take that 50-yard gain away. But I think they did a great job in the second half of keeping their composure when they saw Drew Tecumseh get ejected, and rallying around the defense and staying true to their keys, and guys stepped in and filled the role, and that's what you expect as a coach. But I don't think the ejection overall affected the defense too much.
Caleb, we'll get into the Wyoming game and a lot more on this pass game tomorrow during the Tony Sanchez radio show. We appreciate the time.
I appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback. Real quick impression of being at Northwestern. My God, Pat Fitzgerald does a nice job. I don't think that team's that good this year. I'm not sure that Hunter Johnson is a big-time quarterback.
He doesn't look like it.
He needs to grow into it. He's a small guy. He's slow, even though he got out for a couple of runs. But my reference to, my God, Pat Fitzgerald does a nice job, their facilities, oh boy. Now, they have this unbelievable athletic facility slash football indoor practice facility. Mm-hmm. Like, they $270 million. Like, it's unheard of. It's ridiculous. But that stadium, I guess, is the next step. Holy, that thing is so freaking old.
Show me pictures.
Well, it's reminiscent of, like, San Jose.
Yeah.
They're the Big Ten. The UNLV locker room, I'm sure the Northwestern locker room is beautiful, but the UNLV locker room.
Folding chairs.
Oh, like, my God.
Splotchy paint. It was ridiculous.
Holy cow. He's winning in a stadium that was built in freaking, you know, it obviously they've added to it, but in 1926.
Really?
He's winning in the Big Ten.
Wow. You were like 17?
Yeah, I was 17. Up next, we get to the square take on the NFL. Our regular guy rep, one Gooch.
The crew over at Finley Toyota speak Spanish, Thai, and even Persian. In fact, they speak 14 different languages. Come in and talk the universal language of big savings today. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Moving towards the halfway point of the show. I'm looking forward to this. Especially since Adam Hill's not here, so we can actually hear Gooch instead of having them bicker and fight and get through one point.
You guys used to live together, right?
Oh, yeah, we used to live together.
I didn't know that.
They're friends? Going back.
We're the best of enemies.
Yes, going back 20-plus years. So you can hear Gooch every day. What time, Gooch, on comp?
2 to 7 p.m., Monday through Friday on your FM dial.
That's a good radio voice.
Isn't it 2 to 7 right now?
Yeah, why not?
He's got some free time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
We cross-promote. Plus, he's a developing sports personality. We'll talk about his podcast in a little bit. And he's also going to join us at the Westgate on Sunday mornings for the... Don't take this...
For 2 minutes?
Offensively. No, wait. I don't think offensively is the right word. Well, he got cut short this week. So anyway, he's kind of the regular guy sports fan that we need on the show instead of the highbrow annoying Adam Hill.
Right, right. The guy who thinks he knows stuff and then you're just kind of like, huh? Explain that. And then the more the explanation goes, the more insane it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm smarter than everyone.
Of course.
You don't claim to be smart.
No, I don't. I barely graduated high school. Adam, on the other hand, was like the almost the valedictorian if he didn't stand by some dumb report that his teacher... There was like a story where he was going to be valedictorian, but he wrote a report.
Really?
Yeah. And the teacher didn't like the report, and he was like, okay, write another one. And I was like, no, this is what I believe. And it knocked him all the way down to 4, and now he's not valedictorian.
By the way, all the way down to four.
All the way down to four. Meanwhile, hang with me and the rest of the guys over at 346, Adam, dummy.
You are a Browns fan.
I'm a diehard Browns fan.
Were you encouraged by last night's victory?
No, not at all. I was not at all encouraged. They have to, number one, Myles Garrett, stop trying to destroy everyone. It's like he's trying to be Lawrence, Lawrence Taylor just destroying Joe Namath.
Wait, what?
Not Joe Namath, but Joe Theismann.
What's happening here? Wait, I get the Joe Theismann point. Wait, you want Myles Garrett to dial it down?
Well, dude, I'm just saying, like, how many more unsportsmanlike conduct penalties has he got to get? That's two. It was two last week, and I think he had two the week before. That's 30. That's 60 yards in two games.
So some of them were ticky-tack, though. I mean, we can get into the whole Pandora's box of NFL officiating and how bad these roughing the passer calls and personal fouls are. But
I get that. I get that. But the one thing that does scare me the most is Baker Mayfield. I mean, he does not look like the guy he was second half of the season. They're not running the ball. I think it's the coaching staff not putting him in good situations. I really do.
Well, he overthrew a lot of passes last night.
Mm-hmm. He did do that, but I also think he's rushing. Like, look, man, the one thing I don't like about the NFL is it's a league of parity. And like when Sean McVay came on the scene, he was like, we got to start doing this air raid. We got to start throwing all the time and get cute. And it's like, sometimes you just got to be a ground and pound football team and take advantage of the fact that some of these teams are finesse. Sometimes brute strength is what overcomes.
All right. Regular guy, Gooch, more NFL takes. Do you dislike Big Ben more or Steelers fans more?
I would have to say Big Ben more because most Steeler fans don't have sexual assault cases against them.
Okay, solid answer.
Mathematically, I think that's true.
Mathematically, I'm not saying individually. But
I really don't like Big Ben. Mm-hmm. But I dislike Steeler fans even more.
Sometimes they get a little. But the thing is, though, is I've been at Cleveland Browns games where I've seen fans do insane things. There was one take a long time ago where a grown man tackled an 8-year-old Jets fan right outside the stadium, like speared him like it was Terry Tate office linebacker.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
I was going to say Steve would be down for that.
Just totally de-cleated an 8-year-old.
So I'm not happy that Big Ben got hurt and is down for the season, but I am happy that Steelers fans now have to feel what the rest of us feel, which is crappy quarterback-dom, if I can say it, quarterback-dom. Because my assertion is Steelers fans of the entire group, 25% are not from the area. And if you're not from Pittsburgh and you just jumped on in the 70s, screw off.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me Snoop Dogg isn't from Pittsburgh?
Well, I don't know who Snoop roots for. We know Snoop's not from Pittsburgh, but yeah. He's sort of a Steelers fan, but then he's like hardcore LA fan.
I don't get it. Well, I know he's a big Lakers fan.
Because they won!
That's all it is.
You're right. That's a great example. Snoop is like, what is he, like 2 years older than me? So at the time, I guess I'd have to go back and look when he was becoming a football fan. You know what's funny? The Rams were pretty good. When he was becoming a football fan.
Yeah, and,
but
Eric
instead,
Dickerson.
So many people around the country, and I yell at the audience all the time for this. If you didn't grow up in Texas and you're not from Western Pennsylvania, you can't be a Cowboys and Steelers fan just because they played in the Super Bowl a lot in the 70s.
But wait
you're a
minute.
Phony.
Polamalu was in those Head & Shoulders commercials, and his hair was so flowy.
I went through the lean years, too. There's barely been lean years. The Cowboys have been kind of average, but
all my teams make sense for me.
Well, you kind of pick losing teams. Give your teams.
So actually, it's all consistent except for one. So I'm a big Colts guy because grew up watching football. Peyton Manning was, you know, the ish. But then after that, it's all hometown stuff. Anaheim, I like the Angels, the Clippers, and of course we can go with like UNLV because.
But you,
know,
but you see the theme there.
Yep.
Angels, Clippers. Oh. It's not the franchises, Dodgers and Lakers.
That's right. I purposely picked the Clippers when I was going through my, all right, I'm going to pick my teams now. I have to be a sports fan because, come on. I mean, you got to build some character. The Davis trio years where they're winning 19 games. Loved watching Baron Davis. Like, that's it. And now it's going to be magical.
And you're totally right about that because why would you jump on the teams that everybody loves? Because when, like, for example, the Clippers, I think they're the cream of the crop right now in the NBA. I can't wait to see some of these L.A. Laker fans jump ship onto that. Now you can be like, no. Well, bandwagon's already full. Beat it, Snoop.
They did get Anthony Davis, so I'm not sure if they're going to
beat it, Snoop.
but I will say this. Now, I wasn't entirely like, it wasn't that bad. Like, the Angels won a World Series in 2002. Colts won it when I was in high school in 2006. So it hasn't been awful, but it hasn't been like Steelers, like going to multiple Super Bowls, winning and losing.
Nobody knows what true pain is until you're a Cleveland fan in general. Outside of the Cavaliers in 2016, it's just been nothing but heartache. So, I mean, if anybody's going to jump on, if I see somebody again from L.A. and they're sporting a Baker Mayfield jersey, I'm like, you get that off your chest right now, scumbag. I don't like you, and I don't like your family.
Regular guy, Gooch, giving us sports takes. All right, pump the brakes time from Gooch. You want everyone to pump the brakes on Pat Mahomes.
I'm just saying, can we stop saying he's the greatest ever? It's only been one season. We got to make sure. I'm just saying this. When I look at Tom Brady, why is he the greatest ever? Because when you look at that offense, they've had different coordinators and different players the whole way down. I just want to see what's going to happen when Pat Mahomes starts losing some of these weapons. That's all. That's all. I'm not saying he's not the best quarterback in football right now, but the greatest ever? People are already crowning him that.
He lost Tyreek Hill, and Sammy Watkins had 200 yards and three touchdowns.
Sammy Watkins was also a top five pick in the NFL draft. He's very capable. And on top of that, didn't they have a rookie just come out, the second-round pick they drafted this year, come out and explode for another – he had another huge game?
Yeah, because I think a lot of that has to do with Patrick Mahomes.
I'm not saying that. You're making it sound like I just said he's Dookie. You're making he's the equivalent of Blake Bortles. I never said that. I'm just saying, can we just pump the brakes? And the second everybody started calling Aaron Rodgers the greatest quarterback we've ever seen, haven't we just watched him go click, click, click all the way down the roller coaster? He's not what he used to be. He does not look like the Aaron Rodgers of old.
But he had like 10 great years, and now he's getting a little bit older.
Look at Brady.
He's also done with.
Well, no, you can't measure everyone against Brady.
I will always measure everyone against Brady.
Pump the brakes on that. The anomaly. Brady's going to play until he's 60. Pump the brakes, number two. Gooch on Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson, look, I'm just saying he's faced two incredibly bad defenses, teams that were picked to be at the bottom of the league. I just want to see what he's going to do when he goes up against a decent pass rush that can do some game planning against him. And on top of that, he's playing completely different than he did last year. It's a totally new different style of football that he's playing.
Gooch, where's your podcast? What's the name of it?
The podcast is called We Are Not Athletes. And
Who does it with you?
Me and my friend, who is obviously not an athlete, Greg Salerno. You could just tell that by body mass.
He's fat.
Yes. We do. You can find us on SoundCloud and Stitcher and I believe Google Play.
What's your Twitter handle?
At Mr. Han Comedy, MRHAN Comedy.
So you can find the podcast there as well. Gooch, we appreciate it. I have to do a giveaway. Thank you. We'll see you on Sunday morning at the Westgate.
You got it, Buckaroo.
There you go. Gooch.
Young girl, get out of my mind.
Oh, yeah. Gary Puckett and the Union Gap coming to town. Golden Nuggets 52 Friday concert series. Another Friday show, 8 o'clock. Get your tickets. We've got two pairs of tickets for Gary Puckett, the legend. We'll do it on the phone. 364-1100, 364-1100. You have to answer this easy trivia question. The Union Gap is actually a real thing. What city is right next to the Union Gap? What city? Pretty well-known city. Should I give a clue? No clues. Either you know the Union Gap and Gary Puckett. What city is that real Union Gap right near? 364-1100, 364-1100, 52 Fridays concert series. Jefferson Starship is coming up in a couple of weeks, but it's every Friday night. They bring in some great legends of music down at the Golden Nugget. That's downtown Golden Nugget.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Coming up in about 12 minutes, we'll check in on the sportsbook scene as Tony Neville, TI, is going to join us as we'll be out of the TI tomorrow at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. One winner in on the Gary Puckett tickets. By the way, there's multiple cities you can name. We'll accept it. Phone lines are full right now. So, Mike Leach in the news again. And it's not like headline-busting news, but he's got some comments on the California fair pay deal with the college athletes. He also went on, I wouldn't call it a rant, but gave quite the dissertation on mascots. We'll have to play that one tomorrow for Adam Hill, who is a mascot junkie. I hope Bischoff heard that one because Bischoff is actually afraid of most mascots.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's a bit or he really is afraid of mascots, but he thinks they're all creepy.
How have you guys not brought every single Las Vegas mascot into studio while he's on the air?
I know, right? Because there are some scary ones.
Yeah.
So, summarize. What did Leach say about the California deal where they want to pay college athletes? You know, if your name, likeness is being used for an endorsement, you get paid. That seems fair to me.
California Pay-to-Play Act is what it's called. Leach on the comments said, quote, I do think if everybody's not given, well, actually, in other words, if you're creating a recruiting advantage beyond what already exists, I think it's going to be very difficult. I think there will be a huge imbalance, and you'll destroy college football.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this. Justin kind of alluded to this when we brought this up to him. Was it last week?
Justin Watkins, yeah.
Talking about how this actually could be the start of something opposing the NCAA, like California starting their own thing. So I think Leach, to a certain extent, I don't know if it's going to destroy college football, but here's the thing. You don't have to destroy college football. You know what you do? Allow athletes to use their likeness.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
You're not paying them for anything. They have you, they can go out and get endorsements if they want. They can do whatever.
And if you want to use it, they get treated like any other American.
Yep.
You pay them for it.
And the one though, so there was one thing I didn't really like that he brought up when he was talking about this. He said something along the along the lines of, if they're representing something we don't like, then we should probably just have the ability to cut them. It's like, well, wait, what? So because you don't agree with an endorsement possibly if this starts to expand, then you have the right to cut an athlete? Like, that's, come on.
Hold on 1 second. Let's hear from Mike Leach on this criticism of what California is trying to do.
If you create a recruiting advantage beyond what already exists, I think it's going to be very difficult. I think there will be a huge imbalance, and you'll destroy college football, and I think they ought to be very careful of that. And the other thing, if you can do stuff like that, I mean, surely if you don't like the way the guy's portraying something, you should be able to cut him on the spot, pretty much, I would think. And then, of course, then are we going to have a draft? Then are we going to have trading? Then are we going to have free agency? I mean, how far does all this stuff go?
All right. I like Mike Leach, but he's being silly. First of all, there already is an imbalance. You make over $4 million a year.
Yep.
I don't know. How does UNLV compete when, you know, they're targeting a coach in the $800,000 to $1 million range? Is that fair? Second thing is, and I've been talking about this for a year, this actually would help the Washington States, the UNLVs, we'll say other group of fives. There would be a cap on endorsement money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just about every market, I think, could find deals. The school, and by the way, the school would be involved in finding the deals. They're not going to have an agent. They can't. They're not going to go out and get, I mean, could they? And technically, we want to start talking sales, like, hey, I met this alum. Here's a lead. But mm-hmm. It would have to go through the school, so it's not going to be, you know, your quarterback is, you know, doing weed pops, but in Washington, they should.
Yeah.
But it would actually even the playing field because you would have a cap for endorsements, like, per player. The other thing is the mass panic. There'd be, like, five guys on the team who would get endorsements. You could also cap that. You say four guys can be part of the endorsement program. You name the four. Believe me, they're going to want to sell their jerseys and actually put their name with the number on it. But you would have a cap for, like, max earnings, which, in a way, does kind of suck. You have to do that anyway because what are you going to do? Have the best player in Washington State get money for jersey sales with his number on it in the bookstore, and then you're going to have Alabama do the same thing? I mean, obviously, the Alabama merchandising sales would be gigantic. The cut for the player would be that much bigger than Washington State. You can figure it out. And then he starts getting crazy with, there's going to be a draft. We're going to cut guys on the spot. Cut it out. It's amazing. All of these coaches who do endorsements and make millions of dollars. My God. Can a good college player make tens of thousands of dollars? You're selling his likeness. They're not entitled to that. How many of these guys never make the pros?
Yep.
And that's it. They can't make a little, like, a decent amount of money off their popularity while they're in school for their family who might be piss poor.
They get an education, Steve.
Well, you know, it was funny. I'll tell you, the Tebow thing last week brought a lot of folks out of the woodwork. I did see one NFL player, and I've mentioned this many times. The free education thing here is, this is interesting. At many schools, they won't let you take certain courses.
Yep.
Listen, Robert Smith years ago got to a point with Ohio State. He's like, I want to be pre-med. You can't. Well, it's a free education. I can't pick my major. So Robert Smith's like, all right, Done. A guy tweeted out last week, an NFL player from Michigan, was like, I went and asked to be a graphic design major. They told me I couldn't take it. It didn't mesh with the football program and my schedule.
Yep.
So what's the free education worth if you can't major in what you want to major in?
Oh, and here's the other thing, too, about Tebow's comments, at least, to your point. Not everybody's in a spot where we can sit there and play for our school and for pride. Like you said, if you're in a tough situation and some of these guys are playing to make it to the league to eventually take care of families that can't take care of themselves, they should be able to at least make a little bit of money off of their likeness. And I'm not sure I really like the whole cap thing on play, at least in terms of players, the amount of players who can get it. Because here's the other thing, right? Let's say, and I bring this up all the time, like selfishly, like I really want to play NCAA football again, right? That's the bottom line for me. This is what I want. But at the same time, if you give every single player the right to their likeness, they can use it in the video game, like everybody can get at least a little something from that.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think it should be fair.
I just think
open,
like the max money thing, yeah, like there has to be like three or four people, because otherwise, yes, what you're going to have is the market in, you know, around Washington State, Pullman could support, you know, four stars on the team. Alabama, they'd wind up paying 65 guys. There'd be backups.
Oh, of course.
So you have to cap it that way. Otherwise, these rich schools will pay every freaking guy on the team. They'll find some kind of endorsement. Everyone will be making money, which that's not fair.
I just picture like a barbecue spot with all five starting offensive linemen for one of these teams. You know what I mean? Like that'd be awesome. It'd be a really good endorsement.
That would be cool. And if you cap it at like four or five players, and obviously they can't. Okay. I get that.
Gives everybody a shot.
Tebow got people really flamed up and flared. And the other thing is, I saw a lot of debate down racial lines. Man, there were more old whites in the media who were fighting against this thing. I don't know. I grew up middle class, so I didn't grow up poor. But I can tell you this. If I was a football player and whatever, the quarterback, like my family didn't make enough money that if I could throw them $30,000 a year in endorsement money, of course they need it. And then beyond that, I mean, there are a lot of poor players who come from really poor backgrounds. You get to make money off them. They get nothing. I mean, who would back this?
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Tony Neville on the way. Boss of the book at the TI. This is a crazy week to break down in the NFL. I can't believe this is happening. The world's biggest league, well, at least America's biggest league, and we've got teams that just have no chance to win, getting nearly three touchdowns. What the hell?
Yeah, this is interesting. And you know what's even more interesting, which I can't wait to ask about? So the New England Patriots taking on the Jets, Dallas taking on Miami. Dallas is a 21.5-point favorite. New England 22.5 or 23. Oh boy, this is going to be crazy. And now I would think because the automatic question is, hey, why are the Patriots laying more against the Jets? Are the Jets the worst team? I think the Patriots are the higher rated team. Is the difference there?
Yeah.
But tell you what, if you get to 24 there with the New York Jets, I'm in. I like that defense, and if I can make sure...
You got to get 24. I like that defense, but only when I get 24.
And if I know I'm going to get Quinton Williams and Mosley back here, maybe, or at least one of the two, I'm taking 24. Week to prepare for old Luke boy.
Think all right, let's bang through some lines here.
Okay.
First, Thursday night, Titans, Jaguars. Where are you on the Titans? I think I was the only person on the show who was somewhat optimistic about Tennessee. Jags played a pretty, well, I'm not going to say a decent game. I don't think the Texans. I do not like the Texans, man. That guy does less with more than anyone in the NFL. We're talking about Bill O'Brien. So what do you do here? 1.5.
So this opened up over at the Westgate at 2.5. My initial thought was to go with Jacksonville. I don't think Gardner Minshew's that bad. We kind of talked about that earlier. High completion percentage, 23 of 33 last week. Low yards per attempt, so he doesn't risk the ball a lot. Here's my thing with Tennessee. And we had talked about this on the morning show on Sunday. So that's like against Indianapolis, right? Awesome defensively. They only give a 4.4 yards per play, but 5.21 yards per pass attempt. But they're 1-for-10 on third downs in that game, 3-for-20 on the season, 4.3 yards per play on their own, 5.5 yards per pass attempt. It's just an underwhelming offense, and I don't want any part of that. So to me, I think it's just Jacksonville. Titans are who we think they are, I think, every single year.
Tomorrow, we're on the scene at the TI Golden Circle Sports Bar. Tony Neville runs the book there. He joins JVT and Cofield here on this Tuesday. What's up, Tony?
Oh, everything's going wild and crazy, as always, as we try to sort out all the injuries in the NFL and watch as these big favorites try to keep winning in Major League Baseball this afternoon.
Well, let's talk about the NFL first 2 weeks for you guys. Did you make a killing, considering the fact that I think what dogs right now are 18-13-1 on the season, and we know when dogs cover and win outright, you guys do more than okay.
Yeah, that's usually pretty good. This last Sunday wasn't as spectacular as week number one was. It seemed like with the crowd that was in, it was a big NASCAR crowd over here, so we had a lot of action going with NASCAR. Not as much influence on the NFL, but we had mixed results. The first week of NFL was pretty good for us, but this last weekend, Saturday, was tough for us with the college football. We didn't do that well. Only about three of the top 25 teams didn't cover. Penn State was one of them, I think. Alabama was one, and one other team, and then it seemed like everybody else won by 30 points or more, so it wasn't a good Saturday for us.
Let's look ahead to NFL week number three. This is crazy. Is it good for sports betting? Is it good for the books when games in the NFL pop up that are 21.5, 22.5? Does that cut down on action?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because no one really knows exactly how bad the worst teams are, but this is almost going back to the, I guess it was the 70s when Tampa Bay first got a team, and they were regularly, you know, 20, 22, 23, 24-point underdogs with Lucius and Leroy Selman anchoring the defense, but they didn't have any offense that could do anything. So it really it dissuades people from betting the favorites, although we did have a little bit of action this last weekend on New England, but we're not going to get much play on any of the dogs. Once we have the wrong number up, the wise guys will come in on the dogs over here at Treasure Island. But right now, we haven't seen what that market point spread should be to start getting action on the underdog.
Yeah, I'm curious what you think it might be. I've talked to a couple people who think that maybe like 24 in this spot with Miami could be the spot where they come in and start to take some points with the Dolphins. But like you alluded to, it seems really tough to get guys to be attracted to a team that has looked lifeless in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, to me, all it ends up doing is pushing teams like New England and Dallas, and it kind of sends them in here betting future book bets, and it's a way for them maybe to skip a week where they don't feel like they have to have action, and they can wait till there's a better matchup and a shorter point spread. But right now, when you look at teams like New England and Dallas, you almost feel like, guess what, they're no worse than a wild card and probably going to end up winning their division. So for us, it's kind of a deal breaker, but it puts a lot more emphasis on all the other games. And some of the games we have this weekend are pretty good matchups. And then we got a couple other games that are going to create, you know, not a whole lot of interest. So we'll see what happens as the week goes on. More and more information will come out. And right now, that's what I've been doing, is checking this injury wire to see which of these offensive and defensive linemen are out, as well as all the big publicity we've seen on these quarterbacks.
So we've had a rash of quarterback injuries, but we've also had one benching. What's the difference here between Daniel Jones and Eli Manning, in your opinion? Was there any change in the number?
You know, not that much. I don't think Eli's been what you'd call a Super Bowl-type quarterback for the last couple of years. Didn't make much of an adjustment. Right now, the predicament is all the other quarterbacks that have gone to the wayside. I think maybe the Reindeer might be a little bit better than what people might think, Rudolph, but you know, it's just one of those deals. It's hard to make these adjustments because we really don't know what another week's worth of practice is going to be like. Upside, maybe Teddy Bridgewater might be better, but is he still mangled enough that he can't move around enough in the pocket to dodge the young guys that will be rushing this week?
It's early in the week, so not an easy question to answer, but what do you think is going to be the most heavily bet on game in the NFL? Could it be Ravens-Chiefs? Is it Sunday Night Football with the Rams and the Browns, Texans-Chargers? Anything else jump out? What's the biggest game?
Well, our big game, of course, is that morning is going to be Ravens and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
When you go back to the afternoon, we were talking about that today. The big watch game is everybody's going to want to see what New Orleans brings up to Seattle. Big road game, and just kind of see how the pieces fit in there. We're sitting at 3.5 minus $1.20. Most of the rest of the world's using 4 or 4.5. The other game's going to be Houston and the Chargers. Don't know exactly how that's going to shake out. And then Pittsburgh, San Francisco. I think we're going to see a lot of action down here on San Francisco, not as much as what they'll get up there in Reno. I don't know whether the coach with the Steelers is going to be able to coach them up to a level to win over there in the Bay Area.
It's Tony Neville with us here on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Tony, of course, the book boss down at the TI. We're going to be at the Golden Circle tomorrow with the live Cofield & Company show. So tell people, for local football fans, what's cooking in terms of specials and other promotions at Golden Circle. I know you guys do Gillies up pretty big, the book. So what's going on down there?
Well, one of the things we always talk about over here, and it looks like the rest of the world's coming back around to us, is we've always had free parking here. You can park in our parking garage. It's right off Spring Mountain Road. Come down the escalator there by the Mystere Theater, and as you walk about another 40 feet into the building past the Mystere, we have the Golden Circle Bar. They have $12 super plate of nachos with an ice cold beer during the games, which hits the spot. Everybody pretty much can do either chicken or beef nachos.
Nice.
And then we have three big screens up inside the Golden Circle Bar. We typically show the three biggest games at 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, or 7:30. And along with that, we have self-service kiosk in the Golden Circle. So if you don't want to come down to the book, you can roll off your bar stool over there. We've got about 8 different imported beers on tap, as well as all the domestics. Got a great cheeseburger and a hamburger, like most other sports bars do. But good camaraderie, a good place to come meet friends from out of town or bring friends from around town, because it's easy on, easy off over there, here off of Spring Mountain Road, whether you're coming from the north or coming from the south.
People should also know that Mr. Ruffin has decorated the place with the collectibles museum. There's amazing stuff down there, especially from the fight game.
Yeah, a great photo of Muhammad Ali with his great championship knockdown fight, where he's standing over Sonny Liston.
Sonny Liston, yeah.
And, man, what a great photograph it is. And the story behind that photograph is that the kid that took the photograph was on the other side of the ring. The old-time photographer said, "You got to move to the other side, kid. You haven't been in the business long enough." And when you look at the picture, you see the old-timer's face with this young kid getting a photo that lasted and was iconic and has lasted decades after decades, Steve.
Tony, good spot. We'll see you out there tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Steve. Thank you.
There you go. Tony Neville, boss of the book down at the TI. We're going to be at the Golden Circle from 3 until 6 with the live show. So come on down, watching little playoff drive baseball. We'll see what else is on the tubes there at the Golden Circle. Outstanding spot. We're fired up to be there, and pretty amazing, isn't it? I wasn't going to ask him on air, but that we're now pitching free parking.
Yeah,
that's how crazy it's gotten down on the strip, and it's appreciated.
Yep.
It is.
I had my in-laws come in a couple weeks ago, and they wanted to go down the strip, but they told me, "No, we're not going to go because of the parking." I said, "Give them a list." I was like, "Here's all the properties that don't charge. Go ahead and hit those up, because then you can have all the fun you want on the strip."
Join the conversation on Twitter @Cofield & Co.